Good afternoon, everyone. It is a Monday, and you know what that means. It is time for MU Mondays in the mix. We are right here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network. We are mixing it up with Menu Mondays, the recipe with none other than Chef Andre Blassingame. And this is how we do it. We mix it up right here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network. So thank you for joining us. We've got a great show for you this afternoon, as Andre always does. I love to hear him talk. I love to hear him bring you everything, all the insights. He's got a great show, and I know you agree. So, folks, come on back. It's the top of the hour right here on a Monday, and this is where we get started. It's time to bring it to you right here. Get here with us on the Intentional Talk Radio Network right here. And remember, folks, you can find us on all of your podcast platforms right here, Pandora, Amazon, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeart, and also Black Talk Radio. So come on back, folks. Be right here. It's 1 o'clock. It is time for Andre Blassingame right here on Intentional Talk Radio. Andre.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to anybody out there in listening land and podcast world and the wonderful thing we call the internet. Colette, thank you. My music just it excites me every time to come on to this show, man. A great friend of mine that works one of my companies, and business partner, created that beat for me from G.I. Joe, the Cobra beat. He said, we need something that's old school, that's fire, that also fits your personality. So every time I hit it, Kenny, it's okay if you let it play a little bit longer in the background. Bah, 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 bah. I mean, it's just, I grew up on G.I. Joe and a lot of the other cartoons that came out in the late 70s and early 80s, man. And just to have that is just like, perfect for this day and time. So, but yes, this is Chef Andre Blassingame, Coach Andre Blassingame, here with the recipe Menu Mondays on Intentional Talk Radio Network. I'm excited to always have my programmer and future business partner, Kenny Hendricks, on the ones and twos, if you will, in the background, making sure everything runs great. And of course, Miss Colette Williams with that incredible voice. I mean, she's got that voice. Did y'all hear that intro in the beginning that she gave for me? When she was saying, hey, we got a little bit of everything here in Intentional Talk Radio. We've got the great Chef Andre. Man, I'm telling you. Like, I'm taking her on the road with me when I get any awards and any presentations. She's kind of like, I can't think of his name. Kenny, help me out with his name. The guy that does all the announcing for the major boxing events.
Yeah, and I'm drawing a blank.
Drawing a blank on his name, but he's got that iconic voice that everybody, man, Colette has that iconic voice for me. I could just see her. And now receiving the award for the Nobel Peace Prize.
And now it is Andre Blassingame.
Outstanding. Well, welcome to the Recipe Menu Monday with me, the chef.
By the way, that's Michael Buffer.
Michael Buffer, man. He just has that voice that something exciting to happen.
And actually, he patented or copyrighted Let's Get Ready to Rumble. He actually had that copyright.
Really?
Yep. So nobody else can use that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's the man. Yep.
You know what? That makes sense, because I've heard some other great announcers, and I'm just waiting on them to say Let's Get Ready to Rumble, and nothing happens, right? I did not realize it was because he copyrighted. That was smart, though.
Absolutely.
That was smart. Somebody else is going to have to pay him if they want to use it. Somebody's going to pay him eventually. So as you guys always know, I always start off with a sponsor for the Recipe Menu Monday with Chef Andre Blassingame. And today's sponsor is the Kinza Institute. Now, the Kinza Institute, TKI for short, is a registered apprenticeship program with the Department of Labor, the DOL, and Workforce Commission to provide high-level skilled training to apprentices in the areas of automotive, technology, construction management, healthcare technician, and culinary arts and HVAC. TKI is committed to providing apprentices a world-class vocation, training, and education where they can command competing industry compensation and become successful as entrepreneurs or move up the corporate ladder in learning the great skills at the Kinza Institute in their chosen fields. You can find them at KinzaInstitute.com. That's K-E-N-Z-A Institute.com. And Kinza, by the way, means hidden treasures. So all the apprenticeships that are all the apprentices that are a part of the Kinza Institute are hidden treasures that are just waiting to reveal its worth. So once again, KinzaInstitute.com. Check them out, especially if you're looking for some vocation sponsored by the Department of Labor. So let's get into the show. As you know, my show is always about health and wealth is the future of my people. And today we're going to actually dig a little deeper into the mind. There is a book that I'm very familiar with that I read often. And you hear me talk about this often, Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community. And Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community is a book that you can pick up on Amazon. It's got a collection of about 12 different people from the food service industry that are chefs, managers, owners, some people that are foodies at heart. And the great thing about this book that I definitely enjoy reading, I've read several times now, there's also recipes in the back because these people have different ethnic backgrounds. So you have someone that's Native American, you have someone that's Asian, we have some people in there that are, you know, Anglo, African American, different perspectives on there. It's a book that's curated by my mentor, Chef Alex Askew of BCA Global. So if you want a good read and some additional recipes, but to get a different aspect of it. But we're going to talk about the health today. That book is incredible to pick up. Like I said, you can pick it up on Amazon. Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community is the name of the book. So I'm going to dig a little deep into what I talked about in my very first podcast when we were talking about food and the mindset. I tell people all the time, there's a difference between eating a sliced apple and biting it in your hand, right? It sends different triggers to the mind and it changes things, right? And the struggle that most people have with food is their emotional connection to it. And that's why we end up not being as healthy as we want, because we have an emotional connection to certain things. Like, as much as I love soul food, for years I had an emotional connection to it, but a lot of the stuff that I grew up with that they use in soul food weren't probably some of the best stuff for the body, especially, you know, if anybody grew up in any part of the South, you know, chitlins was popular. I despised chitlins when I was a kid, but, you know, people ate it, right? But it wasn't the best for the body. A lot of things weren't the best for the body, but we had an emotional attachment to it because that's how we grew up. That's where our mind really, really adapted to in growing up. And so when you're building and building a bridge between this health and wealth gap, you know, in the community of color, with, you know, the 1% of the people that have money, upper middle class, however you want to look at it, we have to start with our mind. And one of the things is that it's more than just food, but food is a key element in being mindful of you and your community, right? Chef Alec Askew puts it like this: food is an elixir, an aphrodisiac. It is a necessary component to correct functioning of the body. It regulates how the brain executes its orders to the body. It is a nutritional avenue used by the body to operate. Water is the great elixir. It's not a coincidence the water is contained in everything we eat, whether it's good or bad, right? Because the body is made up of that. So I always tell people, water is the elixir of the body. You know, I know they say standard is 64 ounces a day or 8 cups. You know, I encourage people, if you can go throughout a day and do, you know, 3/4 of a gallon or a full gallon, you'll actually start seeing the health changes in your body. You'll start seeing the difference in your energy levels and your hydration levels just because your body is majority water and it gets depleted, you know, when you sweat, when you have exercise, you know, when you're working, when you're thinking, meditating, it doesn't matter. You know, water evaporates eventually, right? If you continue to put that in your body, see, that is going to increase your health. Many of us don't drink as much water as we should. We may drink enough to sustain us, but we don't drink enough to stay fully hydrated. And it's been proven that, you know, when you are fully hydrated, the body works at optimal efficiency, right? Oftentimes we think that we're hungry when we're really thirsty. I know everybody has heard that before that's listening to this. Sometimes when you think to eat or pick up a, you know, bag of chip or even eat some fruit or grab a salad, a lot of times you're not really hungry, you're thirsty. But then we pick up the wrong thing. We'll go grab, you know, something that's going to dehydrate the body, like carbonated beverages, right? You know, the carbon in the bubbles, you know, it takes oxygen away from the body. It doesn't add to. So you don't get the full nutrients that you have in it, right? So we have to change our mind in about that. Chef Alex also goes further in the book and says, don't treat food like casual sex, right? You know, it's not a one hitter quitter. It's not a night. It's something that's going to be ingrained in you. And to be able to regain our food sovereignty, and I'll probably go into that into another thing, to regain the true essence of what we are as a people and what we eat, It's going to take people that are listening to this podcast and influential people to really change, especially the American diet, because that's where the health is broken the most, right? We're the greatest country on the planet to make money, but we're not the healthiest. Actually, we rank in the top five worst countries as far as health is concerned. And it's an appalling figure because many people from other countries call us the land of milk and honey, the land of plenty. You know, for my Bible readers out there, you know, Moses couldn't cross over into this land, right? This is where everything is. You know, the United States to many people is manna. They come straight from heaven because the opportunities to make money here is in vast abundance. Even though we still have homelessness and still have people that are poor and different things like that, you know, but we are the most profitable country, right? But we also consume the most and eat the most. And that's where our health has been broken. See, the people that are wealthy control our food system. They control the media to tell us what it is we need to eat. If you really look back at many of the commercials that we watch on TV or even in short snippets, it's very rarely that you have salad commercials that run regularly. Most of the time it's fast food. You'll see, especially during the Super Bowl or any sporting event, you got your Burger Kings and your McDonald's and, you know, things in high sodium and prepackaged things. And, you know, it's very rare that you get those healthy choices. And when you have people that watch TV the way that we do or plug into social media the way that we do in this country, it's subliminal messages that are sent that it's better for me to go to Wendy's than to eat a salad. No offense to Wendy's. You know, if anybody watched Wendy's on Instagram, they got some of the best clapbacks to the other fast food joints. I'm going to be having me dying laughing when they just be joking on each other on there. But anyway, they pump what is profitable and inexpensive. They don't promote the nutrition aspect.
Right. That's right. You're absolutely right. And as you're saying that, I can't remember a Wendy's commercial, but I do remember McDonald's. And someone did an experiment. Were we talking to you about the guy that put the hamburger in his coat pocket and something like 10 or 15 years later, it was still there?
No, I hadn't heard about that story. Oh, enlighten me on that one.
Oh, yeah. The guy.
Yeah, I don't recall which program that was on, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Go ahead, yeah, Colette.
The guy took a McDonald's hamburger. I do not know which one it was, but a McDonald's burger, forgot about it. This was unintentional. And put it in his coat pocket. Went back to get the coat. And it was something like 10 or 15 years later. Literally. The burger was still in his pocket, of course, but in the same condition.
What?
The burger was in the same condition. Yes.
It
was
not, man, I might have to pull this story up. Keep going. Yeah, keep going, Collect.
It was not all green and wrinkled. It was in the same condition. So the preservatives and all of the unhealthy and unnatural ingredients in the bread, in the meat. Yeah, here it is. What happens when you leave McDonald's hamburger in a bag for over 20 years? Looks the same. See?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So for those people who think that it's okay to go to McDonald's and consume that food,
you're taking a risk.
You're taking a real risk. You're putting your life in their hands. How could somebody think that that is okay to eat and to give that to children? And I believe you said the same thing as we have said on other programs. And you're a chef, so we take your word for it. Look at our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the condition of our elementary school kids. I worked at an elementary school year before last. And some of those girls, they're bigger than me. They're mm-hmm. bigger than me. And at the elementary level, certainly at the middle school and the high school level, they're bigger than me. And it's because of the food they eat. It ain't because yep. they're so healthy. It's because of the food they eat. It's because of the water that they're drinking. It's because of what's going into their bodies. It is not natural. It is not natural. So go ahead.
And it's something that's been pumped in the media for years.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to knock, you know, the fast food industry. You know, I'm not giving them a pass either, but I'm not going to knock the fast food industry because everything is in moderation, right? There's too much of anything is bad for you, but it shouldn't be this bad. And so with that, you know, I'm a pop off real quick. We're going to take a quick pause to tell you a little bit more about Intentional Talk Radio Network, some of the other great podcasters that are on here, speakers and stories that pop up in here. And it's just a wealth of knowledge over here in the international Intentional Talk Radio Network. So we're going to take a quick station identification break. My boy Kenny is going to pull up some information about us, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes. So take heed, take listen, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the Intentional Talk Radio Network. Be sure to check our website, itrnradio.com, for all current and future programming. And remember, you can get our podcast on all podcast platforms. Wherever you get your podcast today, you can find Intentional Talk Radio Network. Tell a neighbor, tell a friend about Intentional Talk Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. This is Yolanda Williams from Intentional Talk Radio Network. Are you a small, medium, or large business owner? Do you have a product or service and you would like to get the word out? Well, look no further. This is your place to advertise and communicate with your customers, community, even your family and friends. At Intentional Talk Radio, the cost to advertise is very affordable, more affordable than you may think. And why not? You've wanted to advertise on radio for a very long time. Now's your chance. Advertise with us at Intentional Talk Radio Network. We are online, live, streaming, and ready to help you become a household name. Remember, give us a call at 626-394-7012 or 214-919-5606. And remember, you can also send us an email at changematters99@gmail.com. That's changematters99@gmail.com. Give us a call. We will help you get there.
Thank you. Hey folks, it's Kenny Hendricks with the Intentional Talk Radio Network. Be sure to join us this Tuesday from 7 to 9 Central on Change Matters for the second installment of a five-part series called It's Time to Tell the Truth. This week, we'll be talking about Tulsa, reparations, and critical race theory here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network.
Hey everyone, it's Colette Williams from Change Matters. Have you ever thought about hearing your voice in lights? Well, what I mean is on radio with thousands and thousands of people listening. Well, now is your chance. You can join us here at Intentional Talk Radio by hosting your own show. Bring your friends and your family. You might become the next Tom Joyner or the Breakfast Club. Call us. Drop us a line. Let's make it happen. That's Intentional Talk Radio Network, 214-919-5605. Or drop us a line at changematters99@gmail.com. That's changematters99@gmail.com. See you then.
And we are back right here with Andre Blasingame. We're here on Menu Mondays, the recipe with Andre Blasingame. So we're going to keep this party going, Andre.
Yep. Thank you so much. I'm telling you, you can intro me every time. I'm like really going to sit back and just be quiet every time you just happen to pop up, you know, onto the show. It's just like great to hear.
But I got to pop up because I got to hear what you're saying. I got to hear what you're talking about.
Hey, Andre,
about.
You know that's going to start going to her head in a minute. So she can walk around But I do want to say something. And you talked about.
Yeah, go right ahead, Kenny.
Talk about biting an apple rather than slicing it up. Colette will tell you, we grew up with a bunch of fruit trees in our yard and we had plum trees. And to this day, I cannot eat a ripe plum. It has to be green and sour. And I put a lot of salt on it. I don't do it as much because of the sodium. But you're absolutely right. When I really, really want to have that really, really good feeling, I have to bite it. Mm-hmm. Cutting it and slicing it and eating it like that, that's good. But it is still not the same. It doesn't bring back the memory. So you're absolutely right about that. And when you said that last week, I was sitting here thinking, man, he is absolutely correct about that. It's a comfort feeling. It brings back memories just doing it like that. So a good point. Excellent point.
Excellent point. And the other point to that that I wanted to make, as I listen to you, Andre, I'm not filling your head. I'm telling you the truth. I love listening to you talk. And you're not talking simply about food, but you're talking about the relationship, which is so important. The relationship between the individual and food and how we conduct ourselves, how we live, all of those things that are so important. That's one of the reasons I love listening to you. But the other thing is when you talk about the apple and biting into it as opposed to cutting it up, think about that in terms of one's life. Think about that in terms of the Black community, where we're going and where we're not going. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the biting into the apple and what that whole apple means, as opposed to taking that apple and cutting it into how many pieces? You can cut it into 13 pieces if you like, creating division. But the better part of that apple, the way that it tastes, the feeling that you get, it's got to be whole. It's got to be whole, should represent individually us being whole and healed and healthy. The apple.
That is a very, very intriguing way to look at that. Because now you got me thinking, because one thing that I've always thought about, and because I go a little bit deeper when it comes to the difference between biting into an apple or a fruit and slicing it up. You lose some of the moisture when you cut into an apple because once it hits the air, you know, it dries a bit, right? So if you take an apple and say you cut it into 13 pieces, by the time you get to that 13th piece, it's not as much water content as the first piece, right? But when you bite into it, you're taking just that little portion out of the bite. So we're talking about maybe 5 to 10% of the apple that's losing some of the moisture, while the other 70-80% of the apple still has the moisture and a bunch of nutrients put together. It's kind of like cooking in a sense, right? When you cook something together, I just cooked some brisket for a wedding this past weekend, right? And it's the each brisket was about 16 pounds. So when you cook the 16 pounds all together, we're looking at anywhere from a 3 hour to 13 hour process, depending on if you're smoking or if you're braising it, et cetera, et cetera. I braised it this weekend, so it was about a 3.5 hour process. But the 2 pound brisket that I had only took about an hour and a half. Because when you break it down and you take that division, you don't need as much to get it to where you need it to be. And that's a great point about the apple being broken down, especially in the BIPOC community. You know, instead of us taking a bite out of it, you know, we slice ourselves up into so many different pieces to get to so many different avenues that we no longer are whole. It becomes mental again at that point. You know, some of that is the reason why us as a community don't work more together. Now, there are some out there working together. So I'm not talking to those who are. I'm talking to the ones that have that idea that we can't work together. We can't form a union and we can't bind together because our numbers are low in comparison to, you know, the grand scheme. Yeah, we're 13% of America, but we're an important 13%. And if we put our minds together and work to build and grow more apples to bite, as opposed to slicing the existing apples, mm-hmm. we'd have a greater chance of success. Mm-hmm. And it's again, it goes back to mindset. You know, mindfulness is rooted in the love of the community, not just an individual. It's not about the one apple. It's about the entire apple tree, right? And what happens is that, you know, we don't look at it that way. We look at just the apple. We don't look at the whole tree, you know, the whole family tree theme. It's all community written and based, mm-hmm. you know, for us. And again, it didn't matter your faith. We were not meant to be alone or to do this alone. Whether you get married or not, whether you have a companion, whatever lifestyle you choose, even if you stay single. So you weren't meant to live your life without help. Whether you believe the story of Adam and Eve or not, God noticed that Adam didn't have anybody like him to help. And they may call a woman a helpmeet, but really what God was saying was it's to help each other. Mm-hmm. Not so much that she's just to help me, that she's a lesser being because she's built different. She was taken from him, et cetera, all that other stuff. God really designed it because we weren't meant to do anything alone.
No, you're right.
And that's one of the things that we've lost in mindfulness is that we got to the point where, you know, independence is better than codependence is better than interdependence. Yeah. And interdependence is the most powerful thing that you could have, you know, because being independent, you got to do everything yourself. Being codependent, most of the time, you got to rely on others. Being interdependent means that you travel into both realms. Mm-hmm. And in our mind, we don't do that. Go ahead, Colette.
Right. And that's why I have this thing about codependence and co-parenting and co-living and co-this and co-that, because now it has become something that we rely on or we add it to everything. So it takes away from its original meaning. Everything nowadays has been changed and twisted and fractured and frayed and crumbled. So codependence is a bad thing. Not that it's one or the other, but codependence is a bad thing. That is not good. It's unhealthy. And anything that's co, that means it's an addendum to. It's not the original. It's not the first. And when we begin to put something, when we use that term and we attach it to everything, we co-parent. Instead of both of us being parents, we co-parent. And there's so many things that we've taken and we've crumbled it and we've crushed it and we've crashed it so that it has an entirely different meaning today. It doesn't mean the same thing. I would have never used the term co-parent when it came to me and my former husbands, my husband with my daughters. I would have never thought about co-parenting. We're both parents. We're both parents. So when we think about codependency, when we think about co-parenting, when we think about co-religion, when we think about co-anything, that takes away from the importance and the original implicit meaning. Because parenting should not have a co-parent to it. It should not have a co-faction, because it changes the meaning of everything. We're co-parenting, which is the modern day, we're both parents. Well, you were. Yeah, you've always been. So who does the co-parenting? Why is that so important? Why did we have to change the meaning of it? Because it changes the meaning of everything.
Well, I think personally, the term co-parenting came in because a lot of times when people get divorced, it goes into the justice system, the just us system, right? And in the justice system, they make the roles defined because it's a custodial parent and a non-custodial parent, primary parent, secondary parent. And me personally, I think, because I've never used the term co-parenting, you know, me and my ex-wife, you know, we just parent together. That's just what it is. It's not co-parenting or anything like that. We do our best to, well, my kids were younger. They're all adults now, but we did our best to try to converse with one another in decision-making for them and not just let it be one-sided, even though the kids were still divided between two houses. But I think co-parenting now gives some people an assurance that it's not one or the other that leads, because when you go through the court system, you know, in the court system, they name a custodial parent, which is the parent that the kid lives with the most, and then the non-custodial parent. And that's a bad connotation. Co-parenting, much like you said, Colette, I mean, I think it should just be called parenting. You know, we parent together. You know, maybe people just didn't want to say that whole phrase, but that co-parenting, I think it's once again, back to the mental. If you listen to the show, I know we're talking about food, but it's mental. I think it's a mental piece that he gives both parents to know that it's not one parent's word over the other. One parent is more, because I know as myself, when I got divorced and no matter how hard I fought, I didn't get the chance to have the children come live with me. They ended up going with their mom because that's what the court system decided. That's what they called us, custodial and non-custodial. And me and her just didn't look at each other that way. You know, the kids just lived with her primarily, but they went to school in my school district. And they would come to my house after school. And then when mom got off work, you know, they went over there till they got a little bit older and got involved in other stuff. But that was kind of how we did it. So you're right. When you put that co on it, it's like in addition to, and it's not in addition to parenting, it's parenting. And that is what is happening in the community. We slice the apple up instead of biting the apple, leaving it whole. Absolutely. And continue to eat it until it's gone. We slice it up into pieces and then we create scenarios to accommodate our emotion. Mm-hmm. Because the truth of the matter is, you know, food, most people are emotionally attached to their food, like they're emotionally attached to most things in life. And people oftentimes are emotionally attached to a title. And if you take that title away, oh my God, you might as well have, you know, fired them from their job. You know, not a demotion, you just lose your title. You don't have that title, you know, and to co-parenting makes it feel as if they both have the title, as opposed to just parenting.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kenny. And I think words are important. And I think people don't realize how important words are. So when you begin saying things like co-parenting, there's a sort of a connotation there that is not something that we had in the past. Again, you got divorced. I've been divorced. There was no co-parenting. I think my ex was the custodial parent. I was the non-custodial parent just because she, you know, again, you're right. The court said usually the mother was the primary, which was fine. That's the way it had to be. But when you start adding things like co-parenting and all these other terms, it sort of it dilutes. I think it dilutes what you're really looking at. I think it dilutes the family structure. And in our community, we are dealing with such a broken family structure right now. And I think that is just even more fuel to that fire in the destruction of the black family. You know, we've got what's happening with, you know, the music out there that's very denigrating to our women. 80% of black babies being born to single mothers. And so then you come up with this term, co-parenting. It is almost like nobody's got responsibility over, you know, there's an old saying, there's, like three guys, one guy's name's somebody, nobody, and everybody. Everybody could have done it. Somebody was going to do it, but nobody ended up doing it. You know, so I think when you start using those sorts of terms, it's almost like a hands off. Well, we're co-parents and I'm not the primary, you know, I'm the co-parent. And it's just, again, I just think from a standpoint of verbiage and how important words are, that it lends to that further diluting of the black family.
Yeah. I mean, it was a systematic design. I mean,
and we fell for it.
I mean, it really started. Now, this is my opinion for everybody hearing this. I don't have any statistics on it, but this is just the way that I grew up. A lot of us grew up not having a lot of money. So in the mid-70s, it went from a one income household to both parents having to work, even if mom took a part time job when she was just working while the kids were at school. And that's where the division happened. I know in the black community, because the father would go out and work. That's just kind of been the mainstay of, you know, of civilization. The man went out and worked, tilled the field, as if you will, and the wives and the mothers took care of the home and the children. And then as things got more expensive and greed started to increase, it went from the men just being able to work and enough to sustain a family of, you know, a wife and a kid or two kids, to we need a little bit more income because I don't make enough to keep up with inflation. Right. So mom goes out and get a little job working at a daycare or, you know, a little corner store, whatever she did, maybe become a teacher so she could be there with the kids. And that's where the division started, because mom was no longer at home instilling those disciplined values of, you know, cleaning up and, you know, getting up on time and being respectful. Yes, sir. No, sir. You know, those things, because she had to go out of work. And then the school system became the parent. The daycares became the parent. And it put a huge separation, because it became more economical and mental. Because, to be honest, men of color just didn't make as much money in the 70s and 80s as men that weren't of color. That's just facts. That is something statistical you can look up in the middle of my opinion. But I think that's where the division began, because once they freed us as slaves, we bonded together. We stayed married. And even if there was infidelity, they stayed married and have 8 or 9 kids. I know, like my grandfather and grandmother were married, you know, till he passed away. It had, you know, I've got 4 uncles and my father. So it's 5 of them. And it was 4 girls. It was nothing to have that big of the family.
Right.
And they ran the family cleaners down in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, together in an affluent black community, you know. And as time went on, they separated us by making stuff too expensive, not allowing us the materials that we need in our own communities to keep our own communities going, and alienated us from the same opportunities on purpose. It was a systematic setup for us to be poor, because they want to keep us under their boot.
Integration.
You know what? That's a whole nother conversation. We're still talking about food. We're talking about, you know, integration in the 70s. Just, you know, let's ship some of the best and brightest of the black community out to another community so they could be the best and brightest and show up for those schools and make them incredible academias, and just let the ones in the poor community just fall to the wayside and get to set. But that's going to be another podcast, because see, we're still talking about healthy life, mind, and food at this one, right? So, but you're right with the integration. And I think that was one of the reasons, that was one of the systematic things that was implemented to separate us, because everybody knows that, you know, the mother in the home, she instilled that balance, because most of the time the father was gone. He brought in the discipline and how to be a man, or, you know, how to look for the right man. Mom brought in the, you know, the softness for men to be, you know, have a balance between, I don't want to talk about it, but being able to talk about it with a woman and knowing how to treat a woman, and teaching daughters how to treat their man. And it just got lost in the sauce when mom had to go to work. She was no longer that staple at home. And then dad had to work more hours. I know my father, when my mom passed away, he was already working a 12 to 13 hour shift, you know, at the post office just to stay afloat, you know. And it was systematically set up that way, because he's a former military man from the Army. And, you know, I was a military brat, and he was in both the Korean and the Vietnam War. And he came back and got a nice little, you know, little check every month, but it wasn't enough to sustain a family. You know, if he was a single man coming back from the war during that time, probably would have been great. But, you know, he had a family. You know, I got older brothers and sisters. And so they set it up for us to not succeed.
Right.
It was designed to fail.
And we didn't even recognize that.
No, we thought we were getting something great.
And then they brought so in, awesome. They brought in feminist.
Right.
Ooh, you know, yeah, and black women didn't have the luxury trying to be feminist, because they were working when women of other neighborhoods had the luxury of staying home. Black women couldn't stay home. So
exactly. Yeah. So how can they fight for feminism if they got to go to work?
Exactly.
Right. And our fight was not their fight. Our fight was nothing like that. When they said we want to have the same rights, equal rights, women are still talking about that today. And remember, last week was pay a black woman the same wage that a white man makes. So it was equal pay day last week, and I think that was August 3rd. It was equal pay day. So black women are still at the bottom. We're still not equal. We know that black men are not, but it's been recognized that black women are still unequal. Equal pay day. So when in the 70s, when feminism came in and white women were burning their bras and telling their husbands that they weren't going to have dinner ready, and telling their kids to fix a peanut butter sandwich on their own. Black women had already done that. And we went through a lot. We went through a lot because there were black women that said that feminism wasn't for us. Women's liberation didn't have anything to do with us. Women's lib. And there were a lot of times, lots of times, when that was the joke, women's lib. Because it was a joke for us, and then it became real. And it still does not benefit us today. I was on Clubhouse this morning, and they were talking about people who still, as of today, put women out front so that the business can be a woman-owned business, and they can reap the benefits of that. They can reap the benefits of that.
100% correct.
That's done in the white community. Black women are a part of the business. Women are out there in front.
Yeah.
So it's a slippery slope. There.
It is, and it's interesting you say that about women being out front, because it was something that I learned in the food industry. You ever notice that, you know, about 90% of the time when you go into any type of restaurant, the hostess is female or the cashier is female, right?
Yep.
That's because I was taught, and then we're going to take a little station break, that, you know, guys are handsome, women are beautiful. Men and women both like looking at women, but men and women both don't like looking at men. And it's a perception thing, right? Because guys, we see each other, we might think a guy, you know, is not a bad looking dude, but we're not going to tell him, oh my God, you look great today, you know? Or you're a handsome guy, man, love that haircut. We might compliment friends and people we know, but not walking into a store. But women and men both will compliment a good-looking cashier, good-looking hostess, good-looking waiter. So Colette, you're 100% right. They put the women out of the forefront because most time everybody likes an attractive woman. It's just what it is. And women have no problem dipping to their feelings to compliment that. It actually increases sales. It's a sales tactic. You know, if a man go into a room with a bunch of men and he takes a beautiful woman in there, addressed correctly, he'll close the deal 80% times more because they're so focused on her beauty, even though he's the one giving the presentation. And she wouldn't have to know anything. Right. She could just say yes and agree and sit there and be pretty. It's been like that. Mm-hmm. It's been like that. So, and yeah, you're 100% right.
And the other part of that is nowadays, and I don't understand it, you cannot compliment a woman. But we do have those, continue to have those instances where a man can compliment a woman and it won't go any further. But nowadays, it's considered harassment.
Right.
It's considered he came on to me, or that is, you better be careful because that's harassment, that's sexual harassment. And I can bet, I don't know the daytime or place, but I will bet you it's going to come back and bite everybody. Mm-hmm. It's going to bite everybody because there should never be a time where men can and not say to a woman, you look nice. I like that dress. There should never be a time when that's considered inappropriate and sexual harassment.
Well, I mean, we live in a current society of big egos and sensitive people. I mean, uh-huh. That's the only way that I could put it. It's like the mindful portion of our solitude has gone that way. Now, I'm not saying for my women that are listening to this, because I know I have quite a few women that listen, not saying that some of the men aren't sexually harassing, right? But it's not always that way. It's just not. And oftentimes, it gets taken that way. But we're in a society that, like I said, is so sensitive. You can't say anything about anybody and people not get offended these right. days, right? And the last I checked, a healthy life means a life full of joy, you know, having cultural pride, feelings of togetherness and community, satisfaction in life. You get to enjoy what you consume with your fellow man or fellow woman. And these days, you can't say anything without, you know, culture being canceled. That's the new hashtag phrase that is getting on my last nerve. You know, somebody make a comment about, you know, the LGBT community, or make a comment about, you know, a married couple, or make a comment about somebody being single, and people will just cancel them like, oh my God, you really said that? There's more people out there that believe that. How are you going to cancel that person for their opinion? Because you're too doggone sensitive. Like, we don't have tough skin anymore. You know, I'm going to go back to the apple reference. Again, remember, we're talking about food. You know how apple has a little bit harder exterior than a peach. It's like we got a peach society these days. It's like it's a fuzz on the outside. You squeeze it too hard, you know, you're going to bruise it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's disappointing. We don't have the melon thickness anymore. We don't have the, you know, you could thump it and flick it, it's going to be all right. But no, you got to drop it off the counter for it to shatter type thickness now. You know, we're straight nectarine and peach on the outside now. And it's disappointing. It's like you can't, on one end, you know, you can't compliment a beautiful woman. And on the other end, if you do, she considers you to be hitting on her sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. And you want to compliment her. Just because you want to compliment her, mm-hmm. not because you're trying to talk to her, you're trying to get with her or know anything about her. And, you know, it's like, and even on the other end, the women nowadays aren't even saying thank you. The new phrase is, I know.
Oh, really?
Women's empowerment.
Oh,
when I tell you this mindfulness thing, you know, with And the food plays such a big part in this, guys. I'm going to continue to go back to the food because 100% of people eat and we're emotional eaters. But anyway, it's times now that, you know, you get some of these really independent women and women that, you know, stand on their own, you know, maybe a single mom or just single, don't have a man. You compliment them and say, man, you look great today. I know I look great, but thank you. Oh, man. I'm telling you. And this is going to ruffle some feathers with some ladies listening, but you, some of y'all listening know that that's you. And if it's not you, I'm talking to the person sitting next to you. And it's like, again, big egos and soft, you know, emotions. It's like they're just sensitive.
I know.
It's I'm getting a little bit excited about it because, you know, I got four daughters and I had to teach them not to be that way. You know, they weren't that way naturally, but they got influenced by, you know, their friends and things like that. And be like, no, don't ever get so hearty that, yeah, you may be attractive, but if somebody give you a compliment, yeah, tell them, you just say thank you. You move on. You know, you don't have to flaunt and take it to that next level.
I know.
You know, but it's like that. Really? And it's disappointing.
It is.
That's an interesting point because we have fewer marriages these days too.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because of that. Mm-hmm. Because of that.
There's got to be a correlation there.
There is a correlation because men don't know what's going to set a woman off. Men don't know what they can and cannot do or say. Facts. Because it's unclear. Can I compliment her? Can I say I want to take her out? Is she an individual? Is she her own woman? Is she going to bite my head off? How is that going to work? So fewer marriages, and there's something going on the internet right now. And I want to say it was next to Black Enterprise. Oh, I'm sorry. It was Dr. Cindy Duke, who is an infertility doctor in Las Vegas. And she's got an article about being a single parent and wanting to do it alone. So are we saying that men are not necessary? They're not useful? Are we saying that we've gotten to a point where we don't need men to pursue women? Women don't need that anymore? We're on a trajectory that is inhumane. We are on a trajectory that is really damaging. So marriages have crumbled. Women say they don't need a man. I don't need a man. What can a man do for me? And unfortunately, I hear that and I shake my head. There goes the apple. There goes the apple.
Yep. Forget the tree.
Forget.
She'd rather have it sliced. Like, I want to be a mom, but I don't want to have sex to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have a man involved.
Yes.
So I'm going to go down to the clinic and do what's it called? In vitro. Uh-huh. And impregnate myself because then I don't have to worry about whether he does for my kid or not.
Right. I don't want to be saddled or strapped with some man who's not going to do anyway.
Society has definitely gotten that way. Go ahead, Kenny.
But you know those sentences of what word do they always start with? I don't need no man. I want to raise this. I. What about the kid? You know, you may be the greatest mother in the world. And we had a show on this before, Andre, talking about, you know, can a woman raise a man? And there was a gentleman on the program who has a play by that same name. And I said to him, you know, I mean, and there are cases where single women have raised young men and they've been successful. But the question should not be, can a woman raise a man? The question should be, should a woman have to raise a man by herself? And that's an unequivocal no. It is an absolute no. The family structure is a family structure. That is not a Western construct as the folks in the BLM organization think. It is not a Western construct. Families are universal and children need as much as they can both parents. And that's just a fact of life.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's how God designed it. God is a God of balance.
Exactly.
He's not out of balance. He's a God of balance. And so the reason, again, we'll go back to what we talked about in the beginning when I was talking about Adam and Eve. You know, he saw that Adam was out of balance. All the animals had somebody, right? Mm-hmm. And he didn't just give it to him because he wanted to give him a companion or just give it to him just to be giving it to him. He saw that everything else he created was great, and everybody had a match, a partner, someone to endure life with, someone to continue on with. Every animal had a male and a female version, right? Except for Adam. And so he gave Adam some help. Not a helpmate, not someone Adam had to control, but someone that was supposed to walk with him mm-hmm. in alliance. In building something greater. And none of us can do everything by ourselves. And little things before, you know, we wrap up to the end of the show. You know, it takes more than one person to farm. It takes more than one person to create a water system. Just imagine for my people that are thinkers out there, when it's like, well, I can do this by myself. Okay, I'm going to challenge your point. If you can do this by yourself, do me a favor. I want you to build your house. I want you to do the plumbing, the schematics, the architect, lay all the floor, build the refrigerator. You're not going to buy a refrigerator because, see, remember, you don't need anybody else. You're not going to buy a stove. You're going to build it. You're going to gather all the materials yourself. You're going to hammer it, electric it, you know, put the electricity to it. You're going to get all the tools that are needed, but you're going to create all of this by yourself. And then you still got to work and bring the income in to pay for all this stuff. You got to do it by yourself. So when you say you're independent, are you really? You can't even, can you create your own water system where you don't have to pay the water company or the water bill every month? Can you create your own electrical grid like Texas has, the only one that has its own electrical grid? Create your own electrical grid where you don't have to pay a company. You can start another company. Can you collect your own trash and create your own landfill?
Right.
Can you grow your own food, harvest your own food, cook it and feed your family every single day off that harvest? Because remember, you're independent.
Right.
You know, you don't need anybody else. You're not codependent. You're independent.
Yep.
When you need to be interdependent. That's why, see, it was designed to be interdependent. That's why seeds are planted, trees and plants are made, and the fruit comes from it. The fruit just don't pop up out the ground. It starts in a minuscule level, a molecular level, so minute that we cannot see it with the human eye. And it turns into this beautiful, vast array of an incredible ecosystem of different things. Oak trees. Think about how many branches are on an oak tree. When I think about grapes, look how many grapes come out of a grapevine, right? They don't do it by themselves. The leaves on the grapes have a purpose. The vine has a purpose. The root has a purpose. We might just eat the grapes, but don't realize there's nutrients going through that entire thing. And see what has happened with us being so independent that in our minds, we think we don't need anything else. So I challenge anybody that's independent out there, male or female, that don't need the opposite sex, that don't need additional help, that don't need a friend in need, that don't need somebody to help you move that couch or change that tire. Let me know how independent you are when you need a tow truck.
Yeah.
Can you carry that car by yourself? No.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just saying, we've got this twisted. And the government and the people above are controlling us with the media and what we consume.
Mm-hmm.
And it's destroying our minds. We're no longer mindfully being for the community. We're being mindful for ourselves. And the reason why Dr. King came up with the mindful eating for the beloved community, it wasn't just about the food. The food is an element because we need it to grow. We need it to sustain. It was about what you're eating mentally. And oh, did we dive into that today on this show? So I appreciate you guys, man. We're almost done for this show. Colette and Kenny, thank you so much once again for joining me on this journey of health and wealth, bridging that health and wealth gap for the future of our people, and bringing your insight and your wisdom of many years of enjoying this thing we call life. So this has been Coach Dre Blass, Colette, Kenny, for the Recipe Menu Monday. Make sure you tune in next Monday, 3 p.m. Central Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. East, where we're going to be diving more, because I didn't even get into the other half of the Mindful Eating book and food and things that's going to be great to consume for the body. So I look forward to seeing you on the next week, 3 p.m. Monday, Central Standard Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. out East. I love you. I wish you the best. And here's some good news you can use. Your health is your wealth. Have a fantastic day. Appreciate you. This has been Chef Andre Blassingame with the Recipe Menu Monday.
Great job, Andre. Great job. And folks, remember, you can get Andre's show, his podcast, on all of your podcast platforms. That's Amazon, that's Stitcher, Google, and Black Talk Radio Network. All of your podcast platforms, you can get Andre's show. You can get all of the shows that are right here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network. So folks, join us again. And this afternoon, we've got Mindful Mondays with Dr. Corliss Bennett. And tomorrow, on Tuesday, tomorrow, we've got part two of the series, It's Time to Tell the Truth. We will be talking about Juneteenth, Tulsa, reparations, and critical race theory. So join us right here on the Intentional Talk Radio Network. Have a good afternoon, folks. Be safe, wear your mask, and please do your part so that we can get out of this pandemic. It ain't good for me. Have a good evening. Take care. Talk to you later.